So today we're going to be talking about how to get platform specific with Xamarin and why you might need to do that, why it shouldn't put you off using this as a cross-platform approach, and how you would go about doing it in a structured way while still maximizing the amount of code that you're sharing. I see some faces that were in the talk yesterday, which is great to see. Brief introduction to me. I head up mobile development for this region of the White Clark Group. We specialize in software for the asset finance and leasing industry. And I also run the Sydney Xamarin user group. And as I mentioned yesterday, if you're from other cities in Australia, I've got some links to user groups in other places at the end of the presentation. So if you're in yesterday's presentation, you'll have seen this slide, but I'll run through it quickly, so bear with me, because it does have a bearing on the code structure that we'll be using. So this diagram represents how you would have coded cross-platform with Xamarin 2 years ago, and how some people still do. There can still be reasons for taking this approach. But this is where you would have a shared, I refer to it as the back end, even though it's still on the device, but the bulk of your shared code sitting in a shared project or a portable class library with some platform-specific user interface components sitting on top of that. As of fairly early last year, we were able to start using Xamarin Forms, which brings a layer of abstraction to the user interface layer and just lets us share a whole load more code. I do still have the colored segments at the top of that section on the right and at the bottom, just to indicate that there are ways of putting platform-specific code into that structure still, and there are reasons that you might want to. We'll dive into some of those shortly. I'll also be making use in my code of the MVVM approach, which I ran through yesterday, so I'll be fairly brief on this. But that's basically, for those that don't use that or aren't familiar with it, you typically put your models, which are classes representing your data entities, your view models, which is the bulk of your business logic, and your service classes for web service interaction, database interaction, that kind of thing. They can all sit in your cross-platform code, whether it's a shared project or a portable class library. And then with the traditional approach, not with Xamarin Forms, you would then have a user interface layer for each of the three different platforms, or whichever platforms you're looking to support. Bring Xamarin Forms into that equation. You've got the same structure in, again, what I refer to as the back end, but we're now able to share the user interface layer as well, or certainly a lot of it, but still retaining the option of diving into some platform-specific UI customizations and also the platform-specific code at the back end still. Now, again, if you were in the talk yesterday or if you've been following Xamarin News, you'll see that overnight, night before last now, they announced Xamarin 4, which contains a whole host of updates. One of the things that they're pushing as part of that now is full UWP support for Xamarin Forms, which is fantastic news. I believe that's still considered in preview. I'd have to confirm that, or you might want to check for yourselves if you're looking at using that. Okay, now for the new territory for today's talk. So Xamarin Forms sounds great, and it's awesome, right? Yeah, sure. Does it solve all our problems? No. And for me, it's all about setting your own expectations before using it, and maybe setting your customers' expectations if they're expecting everything to go really quickly and really smoothly. It's a tool that helps us get a lot of the way there, but we shouldn't expect it to get us all the way there without a bit of effort on our part. Now, when we define our UI in Xamarin form, the Xamarin flavor of XAML, it renders down to the native UI controls on whichever platform you're running on. But it doesn't support every single native control on every platform, because by its nature, it's an abstraction, and whatever you do in Xamarin Forms needs to, the Xamarin Forms rendering engine needs to know what to do to render that natively on each platform. And there are controls that maybe don't exist, or a direct equivalent doesn't exist across all platforms. Now, we can get some API abstraction, so we can write that from cross-platform code. but not necessarily everything from our cross-platform code. There might still be times, again, we'll go into some examples in a moment, where you do need to jump out to the platform-specific code. And this last bit represents that bottom strip on the previous slide. Now, it's useful to just remind everyone at this point, all of those things where I'm saying, no, Xamarin Forms doesn't quite plug that gap yet, all of those things can be done with traditional Xamarin. If you're not using Forms and you're happy to have a bit more platform-specific code, then you can dive into all this fairly easily. But this talk will be covering how to jump out of Xamarin Forms and do your platform-specific bits and then jump back in when you're done. Before I bring up any code and dive into that, I just want to mention some of the different code sharing strategies and ways that you can attempt to maximize the amount of code you're sharing between platforms. So the very first option that we had in Xamarin land was linking files. I don't know if anyone had tried that or has tried it in different situations. When it was all that was available, I loved it. As soon as there were some better options, kind of goes out the window. And I'd have times where I'd add something to one platform and then realize after a bit of debugging time wasted, I'd just forgotten to link that file in another platform. The evolution of that was then shared projects, which maybe more people will be familiar with from a Windows development background, where you have all the files that you want to share in a single project, and then you just share the project with your platform-specific projects, and it all gets brought in at compile time. One advantage of this is that because the code is getting brought into your platform-specific projects at compile time, all that code has full access to whatever you would have access to in the native project. So full access to the APIs, and with a little bit of effort, full access to all the native UI controls. And then finally, although these aren't in chronological order, I get to the option that I personally prefer to use as much as I can, which is portable class libraries, where you'll have a project that you're working with a subset of the .NET framework, but you can then reference that project from your other projects. And the bulk of your code, whether it's a shared project or a portable class library, the bulk of your code should be in whichever one of those you're using. Why do I prefer portable class libraries? I prefer to steer clear of precompiler directives, which you will end up using to pick out platform-specific bits in shared projects. They do have their place, and I do have an example that uses them. But if you're relying on that for all of your cross-platform code, it can get very, very messy very, very quickly. I've seen projects where, not mobile projects, but projects where precompiler directives have been used for client-specific customizations, and it starts out great. First one, two, maybe three clients is not too bad. As soon as you start having some success with the software and you get more clients and someone new comes in to try and maintain that code, it does get very, very messy. So I'll have some examples of a shared project and portable class libraries in a few moments. But first I want to look at options that we've got for our platform customizations. How can we figure out what platform we're on and make decisions about which bits of code we want to run and what considerations do we need to make in doing that? So the first thing we'll look at is device.os, device.idiom, device.onPlatform, three ways of figuring out what platform we're running on. Device.os is an enumeration that gives us these values, and I'm still intrigued to see what would cause that to return other. But that'll tell us what platform we're on. If we query device.idiom, it tells us what type of device we're on, phone, tablet, or desktop. And then device.onPlatform gives us a way of, in this example, that takes three parameters, three methods. I've just put some inline code in there. The first method is what will be run if that's called on iOS. The second method is what will be called if it's run on Android, and the final one if it's run on the Windows platform. And one more example of using device.onPlatform. It's a similar kind of approach there. I'm defining that I'm expecting a string back, and I want to get a string result. And then the three parameters again, the first one will be returned if this is executed on iOS, the second if it's on Android, and so on. So you can refer to this in your back-end code and figure out which platform you're running on. The next thing we'll have a bit of a look at is the dependency service. So people who are familiar with MVVM will probably be familiar with this concept. This is provided by Xamarin Forms and gives us a way of, at its simplest, you'd write a class that you register with the dependency service, and then at runtime you would request an instance from the dependency service. So that first line is what registers a class with the dependency service. You put this outside your namespace. I, as an example, I make use of this to register my view models with a dependency service, and then in my views, I request the view model that implements the right interface, get it back, and set up bindings like that. You can supply a parameter to that dependency service.get method optionally, and that is the dependency fetch target enumeration, which will either be global instance or new instance, which are fairly self-explanatory. If you specify global instance, which is the default, then the first time you request it, the dependency service will instantiate it, give you that instance, and then give you that same instance every other time you request it. If you call it with new instance, that'll cause it to create a new one. And then the last thing that we'll have a look at is custom renderers. So that represents the top strip of color on that previous diagram. And behind the scenes, this is also using the dependency service in a similar way. So I'm going to kind of present a fairly straightforward problem, a fairly simple problem, and then look at how we would go about solving that by diving into some platform-specific code. And that is just taking some text and, in code, copying that text to the clipboard. A couple of quick points before getting into that. Because we're using native controls on the device, it is perfectly fair to say you get all that functionality as part of the operating system. You can do your tap and hold or your double tap and get the options to copy and paste between fields. I'm assuming for the purposes of this that you want to do some nice formatting, or you've got some other reason to want to copy that to the clipboard from code. If you're wanting to share with other apps, there are also ways of setting up things as a share target and sending text to share target. So you wouldn't necessarily do this, but you might have a need to, and it does give a simple way of illustrating how you would go about doing this. So if you try and do this from a portable class library, you'll trip over. You have to go out to the platform-specific code to do it. And this represents what you would do on iOS. It's fairly straightforward. Android, a little bit less so. And then Windows, also fairly straightforward. Now, it looks as though I've made this more complex than I need to, because everything is fully qualified. I don't have any using statements. I'm not assuming anything. And I'll get to why I do that in a moment. Okay, this is where I dive over to some code. So the first thing I'll point out here, if I zoom into that, is this project structure. So this is using a shared project that will contain the cross-platform code. And then I have a project for Android, one for iOS, one for Windows Phone. And you can see here in the reference, I've got a reference to the shared project. So that all gets brought in at compile time. I've got a very simple page here in XAML. Let me make that a little bit bigger. Simply defining two entry fields, and as we saw yesterday, they map down to whatever the native text box is, the text box equivalent, and then a button underneath, assuming that you want to type into the top two fields, and then press the button to copy something to the clipboard. in the code behind, I've then got that wired up to this unbutton clicked event. There's my incredibly clever formatting that we couldn't possibly do without, which is why we need the code. And then I go into a switch statement querying device.os. So I'm looking at a specific code for Android and iOS and Windows Phone and those bits of code in there that were up on that previous slide. Now, there is a little bit more required, those bits that are commented out. You can see the red underlining, which you can trust most of the time. Not recognizing Android, not recognizing UIKit. And that's because I'm currently set up to build for Windows Phone. And because this is a shared project, it knows it's going to be brought in at compile time. So what I need to do then is use some of these dreaded pre-compiler directives to make sure the right things are included and excluded at compile time. And yes, the astute amongst you might be thinking, if you've got the pre-compiler directives, why do you need the switch statement? And it is kind of a belt and braces approach. I have ended up doing this just because I like the way it gets organized, and it in my mind, it makes it easier to cope with the pre-compiler directives. But it is true to say you could ditch the switch statement and just use the pre-compiler directives if you wanted to. I mentioned now the reason that I have everything fully qualified. If I didn't have everything fully qualified and I was relying on using statements at the top of the code, I would also need pre-compiler directives around those, so only the right ones get brought in at compile time. So I, even though it makes the code a bit more verbose, I tend to just stick with that. So I was making use of device.os and the pre-compiler directives. I'll throw in I'll refer to it as a pro tip at this point. I spend most of my time in Visual Studio. If I try and do an iOS rebuild from Visual Studio, relatively frequently it fails because of some file locking issues in my obj folder. Because I'm running on a Mac and a Windows virtual machine, I can switch over to the Mac quite easily. The Mac will happily move things to trash, whether they're locked or not. And that was solving it a lot of the time, but not quite all the time. And I was still in the case where sometimes I had to shut down Visual Studio. Sometimes I had to, on occasion, I would have to reboot my virtual machine, and it was wasting time. A friend then pointed out this add-in for Xamarin Studio, written by a chap called Jonathan Dick, who works for Xamarin. You can add that into Xamarin Studio. I'll leave that running with my solution open on the Mac, and then before I do a rebuild, I jump over, right-click on the solution, and do obliterate output paths, which does what you would expect a clean to do. It just gets rid of everything, whether it's locked or not, and it saves a bit of time. I kind of make that habit now. Okay, I'll have a look now. While the slide's up, I'll get the project loading. And we'll look at doing the same thing using a portable class library and just highlight what would be different with that approach. So to be able to copy to clipboard from the portable class library, ideally what we'd like to be able to do is have a method that we call, copy to clipboard, just pass in the text, and that does all the work for us. But we know that we'll need to jump out of the portable class library into our platform-specific projects to actually handle that. So the first thing that I do is write an interface in the portable class library that just gives me the signature of that method so I can code against it in the PCL. Once I've got that there, I can then write implementations of that interface in each of my platform projects. So let's bring up the Windows Phone version. And straightforward code. This is, again, that one line that we actually need to copy to the clipboard. We're implementing the service that we've defined in the portable class library. I have had Visual Studio get a little bit confused as to where to find that from, and it can take a couple of builds to get that right. I've now got ReSharper installed, and it just seems to solve all those problems. It's very nice. The other critical thing is that assembly line at the top outside the namespace, which just registers this with the dependency service. So when we come to request an implementation of this interface, it knows what to give us. And just by way of example as well, there's the same thing on Android. And this is one example where we can ignore the red line. I'm not quite sure why that's there, but it does work. So then in our portable class library, the view is identical. The code behind is a little simpler. I've got the same formatting, but then I'm just calling out to dependencyservice.get saying I need an implementation of this interface. Once I've got it, I then know I can call copy to clipboard, and that is going out and executing the code in the platform project. If you're having a look at doing anything like this, before you write your code, it's worth having a look at this URL to see if someone else has already done it. You might also find someone else has already done something similar and you can learn a bit from how they did it. So it's a useful resource to check out. If you do end up writing your own and no one has done it already, then it's also worth considering open sourcing it if you're able to. Make it available on there. And as a byproduct of doing that a handful of times, you may find you qualify for a free open source license from Xamarin, because they're supportive of growing the open source community. So that's represented so far, as I said, the bottom strip of color on that initial diagram. So now let's take a look at the top one. How do we go about customizing the UI on different platforms without branching off and having bits of code all over the place and losing the nice cross-platform code organization that we'd like to have? So I'll start off by opening the next bit of code. And we'll take a look. The example I'll be looking at to start with is just making a change to one of the native controls on one of the platforms only. I did come across people doing this back when iOS 7 first came out, and the UI changed a bit, and suddenly buttons didn't have a border, they just looked like a bit of text. And some people were finding their clients still wanted the border, they hadn't quite adjusted to the new look and feel yet. And there was a need to be able to do something like this from Xamarin Forms. So I'll run through how you'd go about that. This bit of code at the top, I again mentioned this yesterday but kind of glossed over it. This is a use of that device on platform, but using it from XAML. So it gives us a way of saying we want to vary the padding based on the platform, want to vary the thickness of the padding, and on iOS, that is left top, right bottom. We want to give it a padding of 20 at the top, but the other platforms were happy just to not have padding. And that's you'll often see that to make sure your page content isn't mixing up with the status bar at the top of the screen on iOS. If you've got your page rendered inside a navigation view, you don't have to worry about it. It's handled for you. But if not, you'll come across that quite a bit, I would imagine. So the guts of our screen down here is identical to last time, just two entry fields and a button. We're not doing anything different in our UI definition here in the XAML. We're just saying this is a button, which is asking the Xamarin Forms rendering engine to figure out how to render that on whatever platform we're running on. We can hook into that process and write a custom renderer for that button in the iOS project. So I haven't done a custom renderer in the other projects because I'm happy with the way buttons are rendered on the other systems. Similar to when we use the dependency service, a couple of things to point out. The assembly line at the top is effectively registering this with the dependency service. So that's saying to the rendering engine, anytime you get a request to render a button, use this custom renderer instead of the standard Xamarin Forms renderer. I am inheriting from the Xamarin Forms button renderer and then just overriding a couple of bits. onElementChanged override is where most of your code will typically go in a custom renderer. That's where that's the point at which the control is being rendered, and you're intercepting and saying, well, do this differently instead, please. Not quite doing it all here in this case, because I also want to override the draw method so I can draw the border around the button. So all I'm doing is in onElementChanged is getting hold of the control that's passed in. And I'm then using that in the draw override to say I want to add a border. I've got a hard-coded nice ignite orange border around that, and I'm specifying the width. And that's all I need to do. I just put that in my iOS project. And let's run that and see if it all works nice and smoothly. If you've got, because that line at the top registering it with the dependency service said anytime you want to render a button, use this. This will be used for every single button in your app. And there you go, lovely orange border around it. If you wanted to not do that to every single button, but you had some reason to want to do it to buttons on a particular screen, or if you've got a renderer for a different kind of control, you might not want to apply it everywhere. In that case, you would need to write a custom control class in your portable class library that would you could just call it something like custom button, inherit from the Xamarin Forms button, and not really do much else with it. But then when you come to register your custom renderer, you register it against your custom button, and then you do have to go and use your custom button in the XAML. And we'll see something along those lines in a moment.
So I'm a bit new to this.
Okay.
You're in Visual Studio?
Yes.
You're running in a VM on a Mac?
Yes.
How did you get the iPhone simulator?
That's part of the... It does, yeah. If you've got a business license or above, then you get that Visual Studio integration. I'm glad you pointed that out, actually. That's talking to a build host that runs on the Mac. I haven't updated this machine with the Xamarin 4 updates in the hopes that that would mean the demos would still work today. The setup I've got at the moment, Visual Studio connects to the build host. Very nice, works fine most of the time. If I have multiple Visual Studio sessions open and I want to compile a different one, I have to come in here and disconnect and go into the other one and reconnect, which is why I'm just loading new projects every time. I don't have four Visual Studio sessions nicely set up. One of the Xamarin 4 announcements is that's now all been updated. They've rewritten that build host, the build agent that sits on the Mac, and you can now have multiple Visual Studio sessions set up. Sorry, you had a question?
Yeah, just going back to the custom button renderer, how does it know to use a custom? Is it just by naming convention it will look for a custom version of that control?
I'll just summarize again for the others. So that's the question is, how does it know how to pick this up? Are there any naming conventions? Yeah, how it knows which one to get. That's all down to this line up at the top that's saying, this is telling the rendering engine, anytime you're requested to render a button, so anytime I use a button in my XAML, it just intercepts the call to the rendering engine and diverts it to this instead of going to the standard Xamarin Forms one. Yes.
So does that mean now you can use one Mac with a team of developers so that they're all connecting to the one build host?
Yeah, so the question is, can you have one build host and lots of different developers all connecting to the same one? I'm not sure what the answer is, and I'm not sure what the official answer would need to be. Okay, so let me open up the next project while I talk a bit. So I mentioned if you didn't want this to apply to every single button, then you do it a little bit differently. The example that I'm just bringing up is working along those lines. So the next example is looking at a UI segmented view. If there are any Mac developers, iOS developers in the audience, you'll be familiar with UI segmented view controller. It's the one, again, mentioned yesterday. It sometimes is used as radio buttons. It's sometimes used as an approximation for tab pages. You'll often find it used to behave like tab pages if it's nested in something else, because the iOS design guidelines say if you've got a tab view controller, it needs to be the root and the same for a master detail. So if you want to comply with those, which is good practice to do, and you want nested tab pages, then you should be looking at a segmented view controller and using that to hide and show things. Because of that flexibility, there's not always a direct equivalent on the other platforms. And for that reason, a segmented view controller is not in the list of things that Xamarin Forms abstracts out for you and provides renderers for you on each platform. So if you want to make use of that, you've got to add some smarts of your own to intercept things and make sure that you're rendering that. So we'll look at how I've gone about that. It's still very small over on that side, so let's bring that up a bit. In my portable class library, I've written a custom segmented view class. So if I bring that up, again, a handful of things to point out. I mentioned if you wanted to do a custom button, you would inherit from a Xamarin Forms button. Because there's no real equivalent of this in Xamarin Forms land, I'm just inheriting from a view. Now, that's not a view in MVVM speak. It's a Xamarin Forms view, which is the base class of all their UI controls. So I inherit from that as my base point. I've then got a couple of things defined that I'm going to need. Let's do the properties first. So I've got a list of strings that represents the text that I want to appear on each of my segments in the segmented view controller. And then I've got a property that I can query to tell me which one is currently selected. And I've also added an event that will fire whenever the user changes that, and I can hook into that. If I go and take a look at the XAML next, and the impact this has on the XAML, you see I just refer to my custom segmented view, and I'm wiring up an event handler and giving it a name. I do have to, in the XAML, tell it where it can find that and add a namespace up here. And this is one thing that makes me another fan of ReSharper. It just does that for me before I've even noticed. Now, at this point, we've got a custom control defined in our portable class library. We're using it in the XAML, but Xamarin Forms has no idea how to render that yet, so we've got to go and write a custom renderer in the iOS platform, in the iOS project. Oh, that's a bit too big. So this line at the top, can you all see that? Okay, have I made it too small? All right. This is the line that's registering things with the dependency service, and this is saying anytime you get a request to render a custom segmented view, then use this custom segmented view renderer. The renderer itself is inheriting from Xamarin Forms view renderer because the control inherited from a view. So we'll pick up what we can, but we are going to have to tell it exactly what to do. I'm in the habit of putting in an empty parameterless constructor because the dependency service relies on there being a parameterless constructor to instantiate these things. And then all of my code now is in onElementChanged. So I've got some belt and braces code at the top just to make sure I have got a control and it is the type of control I'm expecting. And the first real bit of code is here, where I am creating a new UI segmented control. So remember, this is in the iOS project. So in here, you can do whatever you could have done in traditional pre-Xamarin Forms Xamarin. I've got full access to everything, and I can just create a new UI segmented control, the native iOS control. And again, I'm hard coding a nice Ignite orange as the tint. The next thing that I'm doing is manually running through the labels that are in that list property that we had in the custom control. So I check that I've got some, run through them, and for each label that I find in the custom control, I'm calling insert segment in the native control, which is a method available to me to add a segment, and I'm passing in the text. So this is effectively manually just running through the list that we've given it and adding them in. into adding that text into the control. And then wiring up a value changed event. And passing that back out and hard coding the selected segment to zero to start with. And if I look in my code behind, back in the portable class library, and again, you can ignore those red lines, I'm not sure why they're there. Very first thing I'm doing after the component's been initialized is setting up that list of strings, just hard coding a couple of bits of text in there. And then I've got an event handler wired up that's just checking which one is selected and displaying some text for me. And in theory, that should all work nice and smoothly. Yep, there we go. Oh, I was wrong. Sorry, it's not ignite orange, it's blue. So that's the control I've been talking about this whole time. Maybe should have shown you a picture of that at the beginning for those that weren't familiar with it. And here it's just being used as, well, you could argue that's a radio control or a tab page, actually, couldn't you? So if I jump back to the presentation, if you were going to be doing that specifically using a segmented view control, you've got a couple of more steps that you would probably want to go through. One would be figuring out how you're going to render that on the other platforms, and then writing a custom renderer in each of the other platforms. And depending on how you're using it, you might be happy to just render it as radio buttons on the other platforms. We'll get a bit more complex if you're trying to do it as tab pages. You might end up doing your own approximation of it on the other platforms, but you have the flexibility to do that. And just to give a real-world example of where I've used this approach recently, I had a requirement for a long list in a mobile app, specifically for iOS. And usually, if you're doing a mobile app, you want to restrict the amount of data that you're presenting at any one time, restrict the amount of data you're holding on the device at any one time. But especially in the enterprise space, you can get requirements where there is a genuine need to do that. So I had a genuine requirement to present a list of information that could hold up to 4,000 rows and getting on for 20 columns, so scrolling in both directions. You can do that in Xamarin Forms, and it copes up to a little bit of data. So if you do have the flexibility to make sure it's only a small bit of data you're working with, then maybe just using standard Xamarin Forms controls will work. But as soon as you start massively increasing that, the performance wasn't great. Scrolling up and down was a bit laggy. So whilst I could have gone that route, it was then difficult to say, well, I'm giving you a full native experience, a true native experience, because for that particular control on that particular screen, I just wasn't. After a lot of trial and error and trying various Xamarin Forms components from other vendors, I ended up bringing in the Nucleos control from Infragistics, which they had as a native iOS control, and they provided a DLL for use with traditional Xamarin. So I was able to bring that in, take the approach of writing a custom control in the portable class library, writing a custom renderer that did all the work, and more work than you might think is ideal in a custom renderer, but it did work. And then I could put 4,000 rows in and 20 columns and swipe my finger around as fast as I liked, and it would keep up with it, which the other, using that UI abstraction, it wasn't quite doing that. Now, there are a couple of improvements coming in Xamarin 4. One of those is Xamarin Forms 2.0, which does include, they've brought back the XAML compiler to improve performance and loading times, and they've also worked on cell reuse and caching in lists. So I've not had a play with that yet. I don't know how well that holds up, but I was very happy with the end result running on iOS and really looking like a proper native app. And that, having that expectation when you go into using Xamarin Forms, as I said at the start, that really is key. It's not something that will solve everything and really make your life very, very, very easy. It is going to, I would go as far as to say, it will make your life very easy, but limit the number of errors. You know, you still got to expect to want to do a little bit of platform-specific stuff. And if you want your app to really fly, you are going to need a little bit of platform-specific knowledge, or maybe if you've got a team, one person with some iOS-specific knowledge, one person with Android, one person with the Windows platform, and that's how you will end up with the best results on each of the platforms. Again, if you're looking at doing this, check if someone else has already done it for you. You might not need to bother. I've had a look at a lot of the code in the Xamarin Forms Labs project. I don't habitually make use of all of it. There are people I know and who I have a lot of professional respect for who do make habitual use of it. I tend to go and look at it and cherry pick bits. And often I'll look at something and see someone's written a custom renderer for something. I don't actually need it to be quite that complex. I don't want that much going on in my app. I'll just take those bits and use those. I think there is actually a segmented view controller, custom renderer. Now, in addition, I was going to say, in addition to writing custom renderers for that, for the other platforms, if you were doing that, the next logical step is also to make those properties bindable so that you can use it in a proper MVVM way. You saw I had hard-coded in the code behind of the view, just putting in two bits of text. Ideally, you don't want to be doing that in your code behind. That should really be bound to a list that's exposed by your view model. Ideally, that event would let you bind it to a command. So yeah, there's a bit more smarts you can put into that. So I've got a few links here for if you want to dive a bit deeper into this and find out more. The first one is the Xamarin group that I run in Sydney, and they have given me a business license to give away at the next meetup, so that's probably going to be one of the more popular ones. That Xamarin 2015 roundup, I set that up in conjunction with them, and then when the announcement came out, they're actually supplying some material in addition to the license to give a full rundown of what Xamarin 4 is bringing to the party, and there are some really nice additions in there. If you're not Sydney-based, then that's no use to you at all. There's a group here in Queensland, co-run by one of the Xamarin University instructors. There's also a group in Melbourne, which is also co-run by a Xamarin University instructor. And again, I've left the F-Sharp group in Sydney on there because they often talk about Xamarin. And you do find Xamarin being spoken about in other groups. So it's worth keeping an eye on meetup.com and just checking if there are groups in your area. I had a question at the end of yesterday's talk, is there a group in Canberra? If you're somewhere where there isn't a group already, and you have a bit of time to put into it, it's really worth the effort of setting it up. You'll get a lot of support from Xamarin if you just make contact with them and tell them you're thinking about it. You'll also get a lot of support from Microsoft. They've both been really helpful in getting the Sydney one started. Just double checking, yep. So that's me. Thanks again for coming, and I think we've got a bit of time for questions if there are any more. Yeah.
So you managed to do all this without going into the native code. Do you depend on linking into a library written in Swift or Java on the Android in order to really get access to the custom to the native UI? I mean, I'm not sure exactly how this magic actually, you know, really
Okay. So the question is, to get really native, do I need to branch out and rely on code written in Objective-C or code written in Java or on Android and controls other people have written to bring those into the Xamarin platform? I don't need to. I do have access to everything the platform can do from Xamarin. You have access to every single UI control, every single API, and they do say anything you can do natively, you can do from Xamarin. I have found one exception to that, which kind of leads on to the next part of the answer. If you do have controls that are iOS specific, they're written in Swift or Objective-C, and you really like them and you want to use them in Xamarin, you can write a binding project. There's a tool called Objective Sharpie. I'm not sure how much it's documented, but it's one that Xamarin use internally to create some of their bindings. That will have a very good go at writing C# code for you, so you can then just bring in the native control into your project, the iOS control into your project, have your C# binding code around it, and have that then exposed to your Xamarin code. I've done that, for example, with the AirWatch SDK, not without its difficulties, but yeah, so that tool gets you a part of the way there. You do still have to dive down a little bit and familiarize yourself with the platform that you're working with. There was a chap who came and presented at the Sydney group a couple of times, Alex Blount, who now has gone over to San Francisco and is working for Xamarin. He gave a couple of presentations on just trawling iOS-specific forums and open source projects and finding UI controls that worked really well, and then running Objective Sharpie against them, tidying it up, bringing those into Xamarin, and then making those available on the Xamarin component store. So it is that's another place that's worth checking out if you're wanting to do some more platform-specific stuff. Any other questions? I've been told that 8 seconds is the sweet spot. If no one puts their hand up within 8 seconds, then no one's going to. Oh, just in time.
You were talking about targeting a specific version of iOS for the button borders.
Okay, yes.
Can you do that with Google? Like a specific version of iOS or Android or whatever?
There are ways of doing it. I had a similar question yesterday. My wife was doing something similar with Xamarin a couple of months back, and I think she was trying to remember now. I think she was relying on the screen sizes and figuring things out from the display size. I don't recall if she was actually executing a direct query against anything to check the OS version. Feel free to follow up with me on that, and I can check. But I know she was doing specific things on iOS 4, iOS 5, and the bigger screens. Yeah, another question? Okay, so the question is, have I hit anything that I just can't do in Xamarin Forms? No, I haven't yet. And knowing these methods, I'm confident that I wouldn't. That's not to say there won't come a point where I make a decision, yes, I can do that, but it's more trouble than it's worth. It was a fair bit of effort getting that grid going, for example, but kind of the driver was, I'm busy pushing Xamarin as a development approach, and I can't, in all good conscience, do that if I'm not delivering something that meets what I'm saying are the reasons for using this approach. I was going to mention earlier, actually, you've just reminded me, the one thing that I have found that I couldn't do with Xamarin, and that was as part of trying to bring in the AirWatch SDK and bring in another iOS-specific framework, is that I was only able to write a binding project for a static library on iOS. As far as I'm aware, it's not possible to bring in a dynamic library. So that at that point in time, it just led me down a specific path on that project. But for that's the only kind of Xamarin limitation I've come across. And when it comes to forms, using these methods, anything that you can do in traditional Xamarin without forms, you can jump out of forms, do it, and jump back again. And because of that, forms is now my default starting point. I would need a very good reason not to start out assuming that I'll be using forms. And since I took that approach, I haven't had a good enough reason to do that. Yeah, another question? Yeah, so that does crop up. The question is there a visual designer for Xamarin Forms? Yeah, every time anyone actually gets to chat to someone at Xamarin, that question gets asked. Mike James from Xamarin in London, I think he's here today. I hope he's here today. He's got a talk this afternoon. So he's flown all the way just to speak to us here, which is awesome. So yeah, feel free to everyone ask him that question. I've spoken to a few people at Xamarin, and the response I've had has been along the lines of, you can assume that we're working on something in that direction. I have heard comments as well that if they were to release something, it's got to give a nice experience across all platforms, and that's not a trivial task to do. I do know people who write predominantly for Windows and kind of extend to iOS and Android and are in love with Blend. And there's a lot of awesome stuff you can do with Blend, not least of which bringing in design time data. But yeah, that designer experience cross-platform isn't quite there yet. things like there's a preview release of a inspector which lets you run up your app and query things, and I haven't actually played with it a huge amount. I'm not sure if you can move things around while it's running, but that's kind of as close as I've seen so far, but I'm also hopeful that that will change. Yep.
I've not used the forms, and I've been using MVX or MVVM across.
Okay.
I noticed the whole dependency model is quite different, and the syntax looks quite foreign to me.
Okay.
I understand what it's doing.
Yeah.
That's just a different way of doing things. Can you still use a lot of the Xamarin forms, like the dependency service there, but you still code in MVX?
That's an interesting question. So the question is, if you're using MVVM Cross but not Xamarin Forms, can you bring MVVM Cross into Xamarin Forms land? Prior to Xamarin Forms, I was a massive fan of MVVM Cross. It solved a lot of my problems, and I used it to learn all about MVVM, pretty much. When Xamarin Forms came out, I was then eagerly awaiting an update or something from Stuart Lodge, who was writing it, so the couple of other guys that helped him out. And it was quiet for just a bit too long, just long enough for me to think, okay, I don't know if I can write production code that's depending on it. So I ended up just rolling my own, which then taught me a whole lot more about MVVM. So I was glad to have gone through the process. But that has now been updated a couple of times. It can be used with Xamarin Forms. I haven't dived back into using that because I've now solved most of my MVVM problems without using the framework. But I know that there are projects underway still using MVVM Cross. Same for MVVM Lite. I've seen presentations on that being used with Xamarin Forms as well. I don't know quite how those things marry up with things that Xamarin Forms is already providing, if they hook into them or if they still provide their own.
Yeah, because, I mean, go down one path or the other, like,
yeah.
It is quite different. You know?
Yeah.
There's a lot of rewriting if you decide to jump across.
Yeah, and it's... That's kind of why I ended up just doing my own thing. But then there's still arguments in both directions. I did find with MVVM Cross, taking that onto what was then Windows Phone 7 and trying to have a panorama control with a view for each page and a view model for each page, all within a container, I was just having to dive in a bit and tweak it a little bit to get it to do exactly what I wanted, at which point I then needed to understand all the inner workings of it. So I'm a lot more comfortable now. I've got my own thing because I do understand all the inner workings of it. But then the flip side of that is, if you've got a big project and you're recruiting, there's a chance you'll find people who already know the framework that you're using. So yeah, you can argue either way. But it is good to see MVVM Cross kind of coming back up to speed and being updated again now. Yep, one more. Yes. A bit of both. If you don't do that and you're rendering a page that isn't inside a navigation page or a tab page, I'm sure from Master Detail does it for you as well. If you just got that set as your root page on iOS, then anything you put on that page will appear behind the status bar, and unless you're doing that on purpose with a nice image, it will look a bit messy. Any page that I have that renders on iOS that isn't inside some other kind of container all has that code at the top. You can get more complex than that. Don't think you can get as complex in XAML as you can in code. Yeah. So the question is how detailed can you get with the on-device stuff? By all means, you can. You don't have to use XAML to create your UI. You can still create your UI in code. And I'm told there are actually some performance benefits to not using XAML but using code. And in the early days of Xamarin Forms, code was all you had. So there are people that were early adopters that still habitually write the UI in code. I'm a big fan of XAML, and I haven't hit any noticeable performance issues, and they are continuously improving the performance. But yes, you can do it all in code. You could put that code inside those device checking statements.
About the XAML, in your example, you had just the property, the differences in the
Oh, I see. Oh, sorry. All right. Yeah. Okay. I'm with you. Yeah. I've only seen it used in that way for properties, and anything more complex would tend to happen in your code behind. Sorry. Yeah, so you can bind is visible to your view model and have your logic back there. Yeah, I've used a similar kind of thing to vary navigation models. I'll have some navigation code that says, depending on what platform you're on, am I on a tablet? I actually use device.idiom. Am I on a tablet or on a phone? If I'm in a master detail view, do I want the master component hidden or visible by default? Not yet is probably the right answer, but I've yet to look in detail at the UWP support that's coming with the latest version of Xamarin Forms, and yeah, maybe that will appear. Sorry, there's a question behind you?
No, I was just going to help with your question.
All right.
You can write a view whose behavior is to switch by button and then use that in the Xamarin and have a chunk that is on Windows. I want these two and some of them.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you. So, are there any other questions? If anything does come up, I'll be around at the conference for the rest of the time, so feel free to grab me or look me up with any of those details. With that, okay, I think we're good to wrap up. Thanks again for coming. Enjoy the day.